Thank you very much indeed, Jean-Philippe. It was very, very nice of you to call me to say a word on what I thought at the time and what I think today. I have to say that it's also very impressive to be in such a seminar with so many high-level intellectuals that are so diverse and interested by absolutely everything in the universe. It's very, very impressive. So, again, thank you. As you see, yes, indeed, in 2010, after having experienced the subprime crisis, the Lehman Brothers crisis, and the start of the European sovereign risk crisis, namely we were several months after the Greek, Irish, and Portuguese difficulty, I really had the feeling that we were in a world where the tools were badly lacking. So on what can produce, I would say, the agent-based modeling in particular, and on the fact that one day they will consider it as important, in a way, for decision-makers as are presently the new Keynesian agent-based model, I am more optimistic than Domenico, if I may, in a way, because he explained that. I'm sure that you will see that you will progressively convince much more of your colleagues. But that being said, maybe I was naive myself, but I thought that in those circumstances, and I read the quotation which is projected, when the crisis came, and we were in the crisis, by the way, the serious limitations of existing economic and financial models immediately became apparent. Arbitrage broke down, market froze, market participants were gripped with panic, macro models failed to predict the crisis and seemed incapable of explaining what was happening to the economy in a convincing manner. I found the model of limited help, as I said at the time. In fact, and it is perhaps for that reason that you remember, Jean-Philippe, that I said that, I said we felt abandoned by conventional tools. The fact that I mentioned that we were abandoned was a little bit strong, but certainly reflected my sentiment at the time. And I have to say that I elaborate more, and I was trying to look at my notes at the time, how I was reasoning, and what really were my working assumptions, if I may, at the time. I thought and said in many occasions the danger of relying on a single tool, methodology, or paradigm is very dangerous. Policymakers need to have input from various theoretical perspectives and from a range of empirical approaches. Diversity of views are very important and have to be cultivated. It's not always an easy task in an institution like a central bank, but and I said on the DSGE, I do not think that we should throw out the DSGE and asset pricing models, but that we have to develop complementary tools to improve robustness of our overall framework. And I was expanding on the incredible complexity of the financial sphere, of the economic sphere, and all the advantages that I could see in having a different approach, a richer characterization of expectation formation, etc. And of course, also what was very important at the time is that the incorporation of the financial system and its endogenous instability was very, very poor. And I have to say that we were all convinced at the time that we had to rehabilitate Hyman Minsky, for instance, that had been very forgotten in a period which was quite a long period of more than 10 years of, I would say, mainstream economists, mainstream actors, private and public, thinking that we were in a period of great moderation, that we had totally, totally destructed the big cycles of before, and that we were able to diminish the volatility both of the real growth and the volatility of inflation. We call that really great moderation. By the way, a rule of thumb, if I may, to predict the next crisis would certainly need to see and check whether everybody is convinced that we are in the best of the world possible, because it's the best predictor for the next catastrophe. So that was what we were thinking at the time, and it Jean-Philippe obliged me to reflect a little bit more and ask myself, but why did at the time I was convinced that we had to go further? And I could identify three phenomena that I had observed in the past month, if I may, years. And I will elaborate on each of them to try to see exactly why they were so surprising or so intriguing, or and obviously, of course, so dangerous. After all, we were in the worst crisis since World War II. And I was myself convinced with Ben Bernanke and colleagues that had we not engaged in very, very bold measures that are still reproached to central banks, by the way, at the moment I'm speaking, we could have experienced the worst crisis over more than 100 years, because we might have had to cope with the equivalent of the 20th century 1930s crisis. So the three points I would like to concentrate a little bit on are this phase transition phenomenon. Obviously, it was the first I observed, and it was one of the major reasons why I was thinking myself, there is something bizarre there. An overnight phase transition was not predicted by any model, was not observed. I had not observed that phenomenon. And I would say, convinced that we needed approaches that would be closer to physics or mathematical physics in order to see how we could, product such a phase transition. Then the second point was the abrupt seizing up of the financial sector in advanced economy. Of course, this is the crisis, Lehman Brothers crisis, with this absolutely dramatic consequences. And I echo what Domenico said a moment ago, of course, the incapacity of our models, not only, by the way, the DSGE models, but all models that were available and utilized by not only central banks, but private and public economists and entities to capture the free fall of the real economy. And now, if you permit, Jean-Philippe, I go to the three points. So, phase transition. Let me try to... Yeah, here we are. So, we are... The indicator on this chart is the difference between the Euribor, in the case of the euro, and the overall overnight index swap. So, it's the price which is given by the money market on the risk that is taken by a bank when it has a counterpart which is also a bank. So before the 9th of August 2007 phenomenon, we had, as you might see there, the blue one, pricing of this counterparty risk of around, say, 9, 10 basis points. Very, very low, insignificant, and I start in 2007, but you could go before. It was the way our money market was functioning, not pricing in a real counterparty risk when the, I would say, bid and ask and the overall transaction on our money market were observed. And then, you see, in one day, 9th of August, we had a dramatic crisis, a dramatic seizing up of our money market. And we had then something like a new equilibrium, as you see, or the rest of the year 07. We had such overnight, a Ribor overnight index swap spread that was oscillating around 75-80 basis points with some fluctuation. So clearly, it was not a new, totally stable equilibrium on our money market, but it was something which was clearly another midpoint, say. And that I call that there is a phase transition there. We have to understand why we can produce, again, such phase transition. And I was interested in the way the system was functioning at the time, and I was trying to see what we could do. What we did is quite spectacular, because we had to engage in giving liquidity to the market for an enormous amount. By the way, we decided with my colleagues, it was a decision of the executive board of the ECB. So you see that theory and practice are very close when you observe phenomenon of that kind. We decided, and it was a premiere, that we would give the banks in the money market of the euro area all the liquidity they would ask for. All the liquidity, because we had no market functioning at all this morning of August 9, 2007, absolutely nothing. Prices, if you were able to identify prices, were totally skyrocketing, and we considered that we could not lose the control of our own money market. We could not let the market not functioning at all, because it would have been a total catastrophe, a global total catastrophe, that one of the two big money markets in the world would interrupt totally its functioning with a lot of cascading consequences. So in three hours, on 9 of August, we decided to give liquidity without any limit, and we were asked, I reobserved the figure, it was 94.8 billion euros in one shot. So we could recontrol the market. We had, of course, it was only liquidity for 24 hours. So then we got back that liquidity, but we gave the next day, was 10 of August, 61 billion. And the day after, the working day after, was the 13th of August, we gave 47. You see, progressively, we were reducing the amount of liquidity that we were giving our market to pass through this dramatic event. But passing through did not construct the 9 basis point that was the previous equilibrium, but as I already said, something like the 75 basis point of the new equilibrium. What is also interesting in this, I'm not sure that I know how to control that, but anyway, I'm there. So you see that the US dollar, the dot red line, has exactly the same, it's not exactly the same day. It is the 10th that they had their own seizing up of their market, the obligation to give liquidity to the market, and the new equilibrium on the New York market. So I draw your attention to that, because it was also for me something extraordinary. We had a phase transition overnight, and which was a global, at least global in the sense that the two major economies and the two major money market and the two major central banks were placed in a situation which was as close as you can imagine. I was quoting Bouchot, if I may, there, because clearly there is something there which is telling us markets are intrinsically unstable, are probably always intrinsically unstable. It is inbuilt, clearly. Of course, to explain that, you had to add up a number of information that were considered quite dramatic by all the banks in the world, including the fact that the subprime was expanding, that the crisis was expanding, and some entities were clearly becoming illiquid. There has been also two or three banks were giving information that were quite grave. And the BNP Paribas, which was one of the biggest banks in Europe and also very present in the global market, said clearly, I don't know what to say about the wealth that is in my own money market. Clearly, we are in a totally different situation. And of course, that was an element which was reinterpreted by all central banks, all participants in the money market. So that was my first intuition, that clearly we were lacking something, and that we had to be a little bit more, I would say, eager to capture either new model or simulation that would reproduce that. And I think we know why such phenomenon happens now, even if we are not, we have no agreement or no consensus, no mainstream consensus on what would be the best modeling. But at least we know that this is not totally aberrant, that it can be, it can really come from the real economy, from the and real finance in the case, from the, I would say, overall interaction between this, in this very complex system, the interaction of all participants. Now, let me turn to my second point. Abrupt seizing up of the financial sector in advanced economy. Then I will not elaborate too much on that, because it's very well known by all of us, but it permits me to say a word on, first, the stupefaction that we had at the time, at least, I'm not mentioning particularly one individual or the other, but you have to remember that in the mid-September, I was myself participating in the G7 meditation, because we knew that there was a likelihood that Lehman Brothers could collapse. We didn't know that the US Treasury had decided not to put money in it to prevent the collapse on the Saturday, if I'm not misled, 13, Sunday 14, and Monday 15. So you can imagine that this is also real meditation by real people having real powers and discussing what to do. We had a previous problem with bear storms and I would say so-called private solution was found. It was another investment bank in New York in a very, very dramatic situation. But thanks to a combination of public, help and private decisions, we could get out of the bear stearns. The market was thinking that bear stearns having been saved, Lehman Brothers would be saved. And I myself, as president of the ECB, discovered that it was extremely likely that for political reasons, the US administration could not put public money in this firm to help for a solution or not, to help for avoiding the bankruptcy, even if there was no necessarily a private solution permitting to consolidate this, solution. So I discovered that we had a very big, likely drama coming up on the end of Saturday. But my memory was that even if my colleagues of the Federal Reserve, both in New York and in Washington, were themselves fully aware of a bankruptcy of that dimension in the situation where we were at the time, would trigger an enormous seizing up of all markets, the Treasury was not convinced. And the Treasury in the US was not convinced for a number of reasons, including because they had the political incapacity to mobilize themselves to avoid this bankruptcy. And we have the proof of that. I will come back to that in a few seconds. So finally, it was clear there was the collapse of Lehman Brothers announced on the Monday morning, the 15th, and then you know the story. The big, the most dramatic crisis since World War II was expanding, could have been even more dramatic than the, I would say, 1929-30s crisis. I say all that because it was an incredible illustration of what is a systemic risk, not predicted at all by any model, at the heart of the global economy, at the heart of global finance, namely in the most important market of the world, the New York market. We were at the heart of a crisis, you know. Before, we had crises, but they were either at the periphery of the global economy or global finance, for instance, the sovereign debt crisis of Latin America, sovereign debt crisis of Asia, sovereign debt crisis of Soviet Union. I was very much involved, by the way, in the Soviet debt crisis of Soviet Union. I mean, a lot of drama, but they were not at the heart, at the very heart of the global system, if I may. And so it was not predicted. And when I reflect on my sentiment at the time in 2010, clearly the fact that we were struck by this incredible phenomenon, the materialization of the systemic risk, the seizing up of the financial system that we experience, an economic free fall, a surge in unemployment, a massive increase of public debt, the complex network of financial connections that was the, and again, Domenico was very, very clear on that, that was extended to the full body of the financial sphere, not only the financial sector, but all economic sectors, non-financial firms, household, and so forth. All this had created, again, the possibility of this dramatic crisis. The idea that we could be in a world where no model was pre-announcing in any respect a seizing up of global finance and the global economy because of the complexity of the system, absence of full understanding of all the networking that was underlying and so forth. I reflected on that also in real time. I am more or less commenting on a lecture I gave to Cambridge in 2010, and I was trying to reflect on this, I would say. And I was noting in particular, I mentioned that only en passant, the complexity of the network that we had in front of us, the speed of the phenomenon that we had to cope with. I only mentioned that we took our decision on the money market in 3 hours for the subprime crisis in August 9, 2007. We were caught also by the rapidity of the contagion, by the incredible rapidity of the synchronization of the herd behavior after Lehman Brothers, the complexity of the system, speed and rapidity of the phenomenon that were unleashed by the crisis, the systemic crisis, and the herd behavior were the three main issues that I could identify as being something characterizing systemic, the new illustration or materialization of the systemic risk that we had in front of us. Now let me turn to a point that Domenico made also, and which is a difficulty for traditional standard modeling, say, to capture the rapidity of some phenomenon like the free fall of the global economy, of the euro area economy, of the US economy after Lehman Brothers. And then I will ask you to look at this table, because you have, it's absolutely objective, we have there the growth estimates which were published by the staff or the staff of the ECB or the staff of the euro system, because every 3 months, as you, some of you know, we publish our own growth estimates. So there you have a table with the 2009 growth estimates that were published in September 08, December 08, March to March 09, June 09, September 09. And when I said that we were abandoned by our traditional models, it is because every 3 months, the new confidence interval that we were producing ourselves with the best modeling possible, the best people, you know, the concentration of PhD of the best university in Frankfurt in the ECB is incredible. And so you could not put into question the fact that the model were, you know, standard model, having the, I would say, confirmation by the mainstream economist, the best economist possible. But look at that. The December 08, of course, September 08 is not very pertinent because it was the 15th of September that we had the collapse of Lehman Brothers. So it was the 0.6% up to 1.8%, the confidence interval in September, was something which was coming naturally, if I may, before Lehman Brothers, but incorporating, nevertheless, the loss of confidence, the difficulty that were coming from the subprime crisis, which was per se a real crisis, but of course not of the dimension of that triggered by the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Then December 08, you see that the highest point, which is 0%, is below the lower point of the September 08 interval, confidence interval. Okay. Then we had March 09, and March 09, the highest point was 1.2% below the lowest point of the former confidence interval. So we were clearly falling like a stone, but not between our normal confidence interval. We were really, you know, jumping from one confidence interval to another confidence interval. And it came in March, it came in June, and the start of the stabilization was in September, as you see there. But 9 months of our own economy falling like a stone and no capacity to understand exactly what was happening because the traditional modeling was not at all capturing what was really happening. So when you have a phenomenon of that kind, you can say we are abandoned by our traditional tool, which did not mean that I had myself and my colleagues in the executive board and our colleagues in the ECB found the new fantastic model that would capture the free fall that we were observing. But 9 months of free fall, same in the US. And what do you do in such circumstances? And as I said at the time, and again, it was published, you rely very, very much on your own experience. Some of us had the experience of crisis, not a global crisis of that dimension, but for instance, I was chairman of the Paris Club in the Latin America crisis, so I could see what was the phenomenon of the crisis, and in particular, the rapidity of the unfolding of this dramatic phenomenon. We had to rely upon intuition, history, intuition, and of course on the real economy as observed by the real economic agents. And I created at the time, and it still exists, of course, the grouping. We made no publicity for that for many reasons, but the grouping of the major entrepreneurs in the euro area. So big companies that had a vision of what was happening. And of course, what they were telling us was totally different because they could see, they were participating themselves in the free fall of the real economy. So it was, from that standpoint, extremely useful. And by the way, I could not consider that any kind of modeling during these 9 months was of any use, any real utility, if I may, usefulness for decision making of the ECB. And so, again, there might be other elements that can explain, and I'm sure that academia has worked also a lot on that, but at least for me, I was the chair of the ECB, and I take it probably from my colleagues of the other big central banks in London, in New York, in Washington, this three phenomenon, total unpredictability of the absolute drama that we were experiencing, the fact that all models were not a single model that would be credible was capturing the free fall of the economy. And I'm not sure that many had noted this phenomenon of phase transition, which remains for me very interesting, because it seems to me that physics model can certainly capture something of that kind, even if I didn't see these very data elaborated by non-standard economists or mathematicians. So this is what I wanted you to see, and I don't know whether I have a lot of time or not. If I have still some time, I might elaborate a little bit on some kind of summing up of all that, in taking not necessarily the standpoint of what we had observed at the time of the state of mind that we had at the time, but also putting myself now. And I would say that, to sum up, I will list the standard diagnosis and standard recommendations, conventional wisdom before that crisis. And I will then list standard diagnosis and recommendations today, taking into account not only the Lehman Brothers crisis, but also what we have observed since then, which is also very, very stimulating. I put aside, of course, the COVID, because COVID is really totally exogenous. It's a phenomenon of a different kind. Of course, still, the rapidity of the changes, the rapidity of the unfolding of the drama and so forth is interesting. But I have to say also that the response of the authorities, both fiscal response and the central bank response, was also absolutely gigantic. So you are in a quite different universe. But again, I list the standard diagnosis and recommendations, conventional wisdom before, say, 2007, 2008. I see 6 points to mention at this stage. We were relying upon the efficient market hypothesis. We were relying on Homo economicus, criticized rightly so by Domenico. And we thought wrongly, and it was the way we were thinking, that we would be always close to an equilibrium, and that the evolution of the economy, the evolution of finance, was to move slowly or rapidly, but from equilibrium to equilibrium. Second point, we were totally relying on the new Keynesian DSGE, as again Domenico said. I he said it was still the case. It seems to me that it's a little bit less the case, thanks to you and other friends, but okay. Third point, recommendation, ensure sound macroeconomic policies, central bank and government. And in my opinion, it is still pretty valid. And to all those who say we can get rid of, sound macroeconomic policies are very dangerous, in my opinion. But that is a personal opinion. Point four, we discovered at the time, immediately after, before the crisis, that monitoring money and credit was not absurd. We have to know that before, particularly in the realm of central banks, it was clear that to follow the evolution of counterparts of money, of the monetary aggregates, namely credit, was not a good idea. And the Central Bank of Europe, the ECB, was considered rear guard and being too much influenced by the Bundesbank in thinking that it was important to monitor money and credit, the counterparts of money. I mentioned that en passant because clearly the rediscovery that money and credit would be very important was post Lehman Brothers. Five point, and that was a high point in my opinion, nevertheless monitor overall debt indicators, private and public, as a proportion of GDP. And this wisdom was incorporated, as you know, in the Stability and Growth Pact. And last point, optimize microprudentials of financial institutions. At the time, we were looking at individual firms, individual banks, individual financial institutions, and not necessarily considering the whole. So these were the point where we were, and I already said that the concept of great moderation was capturing pretty well both, I would say, what we had observed with low volatility of growth, of real growth, and low volatility of inflation over a 10-15 years period before the crisis. And I would say conventional wisdom was that we more or less had found the, ideal, magical solution to avoid a big amplitude in the cycles. And many political men, by the way, were echoing that in saying, now we are in a different universe, this time it is different, and so forth and so forth. We all know that, and we can be prepared to see again such a provisional conclusion drawn from a situation where there is a level of calm and tranquility which is sustainable during a certain period of time. We could see recently that inflation was not a problem at all, and those who thought that we had to continue to have in mind that inflation was potentially something, a concept which was not to be totally neglected, are now, of course, with a revenge. On the spot, and the central bank themselves are put very much as a potential scapegoat for inflation galloping. I can see that in the United States. I think it's unjust, unfair, but it is the way things are going. So that was some comments on what existed before. Now, to sum up, what is the new value added, non-standard value added post 07, post 08 crisis, I would say in Europe post 10 and 11 crisis, the sovereign risk crisis, which has been euro specific. And I would try to distinguish diagnosis and recommendations. Four points of diagnosis. We are all convinced now, and not surprisingly, the meditation of those who are in the room, and Jean-Philippe and so forth, tail events might materialize at any moment, taking into account the complexity of the financial and economic system, its potential non-linear nature. And that is something that we have in mind. It is a real value added, in my opinion, after what we have observed. And so different names have been given, the black swan or whatever. I would rely that to the economist Knight. I would call that an echo of Knightian uncertainty. So this kind of events that cannot be probabilized, that are coming without a law, probability law, and that, in my opinion, and at the time I was meditating on all that, not only now, but at the time, Knight was for me a great economist, a great economist. Then, second point in the diagnosis, I said that there were 4 points. Financial system, in particular, are endogenously unstable, which means not only tail events, more or less dramatic and unpredicted, can happen, but also jumps from various equilibria. This also is something which looks a little bit like a certain phenomenon in physics. Phase transition, if you want to name it, large-scale oscillations from one equilibrium to another one. But this hypothesis of instability of financial systems is related, in my understanding, to Hyman Minsky with his own financial instability hypothesis, which was totally contradicting, of course, the dominant understanding that efficient markets had to be accepted as the main and reliable hypothesis in the domain of market. So Knight, Minsky, in my opinion, had good intuitions that can be fully documented by the non-standard new modeling, the non-standard simulation, the non-standard way of looking at the real economy. Third point, when the crisis occurs, be prepared for a considerable acceleration of financial and economic phenomena. This was not new to me because I had observed a number of crises, including debt crisis or even money crisis in the EMS, in the European Monetary System, where I was participating, and you could see the rapidity of contagion from the lira to the sterling, from the sterling potentially to other currencies or to the French franc. All this formidable acceleration, formidable adverse feedback loop that are transforming phenomenon of a modest amplitude to a very large amplitude phenomenon with, I would say, speed, incredible speed and rapidity, calling, by the way, the authorities to respond with equally rapid and speedy decisions is something which is to be mentioned. Now, what about the recommendations? What I just mentioned was the diagnosis. Recommendation. Today, recommendations. First, do not rely on a single dominant model. Be open to a very large variety of models to represent reality, including agent-based modeling and simulation modeling. The two are interlinked, of course. And I would say that, of course, I don't suggest that we reject the new Keynesian, I would say, dynamic model. I think that we have to continue to have both. And in a way, and it seems to me that Domenico more or less mentioned that, in calm waters, tranquil waters, after all, the SGE are not that bad. And they capture something together, perhaps, with other vision. But clearly, when we are in time of crisis, we need a large variety of models to represent reality. Second point on recommendations, do not hesitate to have recourse to judgment, intuition, and mainly to direct real-time gathering of real firms, real economic agents, real economic informations. Don't neglect that. It is extraordinarily important to make permanently, in real time, in this very difficult period, of what's really happening. Otherwise, you might be the prisoner of an equation, and this equation is not necessarily what would guide your best decisions. A third point, which is linked, of course, to the discovery that materialization of a systemic risk was the main danger that we could have in this very, very complex world. Holistic approach is of the essence. I would say understanding that systemic resilience is something which has absolutely to be considered the main goal. And not surprisingly, you had the creation, the setting up of the new systemic board in Europe, in the US, in the UK, in Japan, in the major economies, and in all economies, by the way, you had this idea that it was absolutely necessary to have a holistic view, to have a place where you had the macro surveillance, micro surveillance, authorities of executive form, and central banks together. The president can be the ECB president in Europe. I was the first to chair this board, the systemic board. In the US, it is the Treasury. But you have the same composition. In Europe, of course, it's very, very complex because you have all the national supervisors also that are in. And so it makes a big assembly. But that is something which is really coming out of the crisis, and it is very important to understand that a holistic approach is of the essence. Now, related to that, a fourth point is that the stress on macroprudentials, so not only dealing with the recommendations made to individual entities, individual banks, and so forth, but also taking, the real estate market as a whole, and having new rules in order to discipline the money market or to have rules in general that would deal with trying to discipline the potential instability of the economy as a whole. So macroprudentials have been introduced and are considered of the essence by all economies. I mentioned very often, and you will forgive me, the advanced economy, because the crisis appeared in the advanced economy, but all what I say is valid for emerging economy as well as developing economy. Stress testing, it is very important. It seems to me that it has been noted by many papers I read, including yours, Jean-Philippe. Stress testing, and Domenico also echoed that, is, of course, of the essence. When you are not sure at all of the possibility of tail risk materializing at any moment, or of a dramatic systemic risk materializing, the best way to deal with that is to test your entities, banks, firms, countries, global economy, in terms of what will happen, how would you react if we had this dramatic 5 sigma, 6 sigma, 7 sigma events that would tease you and tease both, I would say, individual institutions and entities, and also the economy as a whole. So, not surprisingly, after Lehman Brothers, stress tests are of the essence and considered a normal way of dealing. Before, it was not the case, it seems to me. Now, I have a last point. Maybe I'm a little bit bold there, because we are a little bit at the edge of the seminar. But I think that one of the conclusions we had from this crisis, and we had that in real time, was the fact that stabilizing expectations in a world which was appearing to be potentially much more unstable and much more badly surprising, if I may, or full of bad surprises than we thought, Then it was important for authorities, and I would say concentrating myself on central banks, to reinforce stability of expectations. And I will take one example. There are many examples, I think, that I can take. There has been a convergence of these major central banks towards a handful of conclusion, provisional conclusion. Only to give you an example. We were not all embarking on, overall press conferences. The ECB was practicing press conferences since the very setting up of the ECB, and it was very important because of the variety of countries concerned, the necessity to discipline the various national central bankers that could embark on their own interpretation of the decision and so forth. So since the very beginning, we had a single press conference to communicate. And some participants mentioned the press conferences at the time. But it was very important to be sure that communication was correct, to stabilize not only expectations, but also understanding of the reason why we did this and that. And I have other elements. But the most important, and I have to say timely element I can produce now, is that we had in the occasion of the crisis, materializing in the US, if I'm not misled, in 2012, and materializing in Japan in 2013, the convergence towards the same definition of price stability. I said it is timely because we are in a time of inflation, but 2% was affirmed by the ECB since the start of the ECB, by Bank of England a few, I would say, years afterwards, in order to, in the time of Tony Blair, if I'm not misled, to try to stabilize the possibility of the UK to enter in the euro. Old story. But we had Japan and the United States without any definition of price stability or any goal, medium-term goal. And in the time of the crisis, without, of course, any consultation between the various central banks, but by logic and by their own meditation and their own decision-making process, and it's not easy in the US for the central bank to set up its own definition of price stability because there was no definition before, and the Congress could have said, it's my business, my job. Like the UK government say, it's my job to define what is your goal. But Ben Bernanke did that in 2012, if I'm not misled, and in Japan they also did that. So at the moment I'm speaking, and in my opinion, really as a consequence of this dramatic turbulences, dramatic unseen events, dramatic phase transition and so forth, because it appeared necessarily to try to stabilize as much as possible this underlying complex system which was unstable, the four central banks that are issuing the four currencies that are in the basket of the SDR, namely the yen, the dollar, the euro, and the sterling. You know that there is a fifth currency, which is the renminbi, the Chinese renminbi, but the four that are issuing currencies in the basket and that are the big advanced economy central bank have the same definition of price stability. They have an arithmetic anchoring of what they do under the surveillance of market participants, investors, savers, their own fellow citizens, as we can see in all our countries. And that is something which I consider myself as a provisional conclusion from those turbulences of 2008. Your suggestion for the title of this exposition, I think that it is important to have that in mind. It is the most important phenomenon observed in the international monetary system since the explosion of the Bretton Woods institutions and the Bretton Woods system. A lot of academics are there. I would call academia to reflect a little bit more, because I am very much alone to mention the fact that it is absolutely remarkable that all central banks of that category have converged. Yeah, but it was my conclusion. I had written, if it is not too bold, why not mentioning for central banks reinforcing stability of expectations through this convergence? So your remark is coming just in time, if I may.